Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to MTG in Quarantine Podcast. Before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Garden Games. You can find them on the web at ggportland.com. Before we get to the rest of the episode, I'd like to give a huge shout-out and thank you to the awesome people who support me over on patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine! So, a huge thank you to Mr. Beepens, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Wyatt, Nick S, Infamous French, Full World Britain, and John of the Filthy MTG Casual for supporting the show! If you'd like to support the show and help me make more awesome content, then head over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine!
And a big thank you to Kelly from the Neo Royal House of Pricey Cardboard for providing today's guest intro read. You're going to be hearing more guest intro reads as we go, so definitely be on the lookout for those. Today's episode of the podcast is going to be another in the series where I bring cool people on to talk about Mark Rosewater's Tumblr teaser posts for upcoming sets. You know, Streets of New Capenna is coming out here around the corner in a couple weeks, and that means it's the perfect chance for us to talk about some of the cool things we've seen in Rosewater's new Tumblr post for this upcoming set. But again, y'all don't want to hear me just talking about things by myself. I had to bring an awesome guest on, so without further ado, I'd like to reintroduce returning guest, Lev Dev. Welcome back to the show.
Y'all, and a pleasure to be back on again.
Yeah, it's good to have you. It's been a while.
Yeah, I've just been busy with the life general, and especially now busy with the giveaway stuff, which with Streets of New Capenna around the corner, I am actually doing a charity fundraiser giveaway, so if you just essentially trying to raise money for two charities, as well as try to support some content creators. And you can have some chance for some sweet MTG Capenna loot. So, I think I have a YouTube describing everything. I'm not going to go into full details, since I do want to jump in talking about the shenanigans of what's coming in New Capenna, at least being teased, as we could say.
Sure. But where can people find you if they'd like to see your Twitter, if nothing else?
Of course. Well, where people can find me is on Twitter. I am known as PGD Hansen. But also, if you want to catch up with my video content, which essentially is deck techs as well as just essentially top deck thoughts, that is LevDev. And I also Twitch from time to time, and it's the same thing, LevDev. So, bada beep, bada boop.
All right, sounds good. So, I've just started looking at this, the Tumblr post here. Typically, when I do these episodes, this for the listeners out there, is I typically don't open the post before I click record. So it's like everything you hear me talk about is 100% fresh. Not quite Rotten Tomatoes here, but I like to try to keep my reactions fairly fresh for y'all's enjoyment. So anyway, Lev, again, since you were on here before, typically I will ask you, and then we're going to kind of go and take turns here. We're going to kind of call out some of the cool things we've seen in the Tumblr post, things that really catch our eye. We're going to start at the very top, so some of the things you can expect, and then we're going to jump down and talk about some of the creatures, and then maybe just give some interesting thoughts for the set, or things we're looking forward to for the set to round everything out.
Of course.
All right, and with that out of the way, what is the first thing you would like to talk about from the upper section of this Tumblr post?
Well, the first thing that kind of catches my eye is actually the very first thing. We're going to see 5 mana cost using existing mana symbols that we never used before, which is kind of an interesting wording there, which makes me think that either it's going to be two things. It's either they're going to do something on a variation of hybrid mana, but maybe it's hybrid mana where essentially it's color based on the faction, where, like, for example, how we kind of, like, seen in previous scenes like Khans of Tarkir and such, where when they do hybrid mana cross, they only do, like, the 2-mana split. I'm wondering if this is going to be the first one where we're going to see kind of, like, a 3-mana split where, you know, like, let's say, for example, the Gritz's family is Maestros, and you could have a hybrid blue-red-black or something along that line. It's either that or the factor that there is a potential of Phyrexian shenanigans, at least if we have anything from Neon Dynasty to concur. So I'm wondering if this is going to be a take on, like, Phyrexian mana again. So I'm very kind of, like, curious about this first part.
For sure. I mean, obviously, Phyrexian mana was really problematic, just in a lot of ways for constructed formats. I mean, it's good, but it's also really problematic for a lot of constructed formats. So you're right. Seeing different mana costs, seeing tri mana costs to be interesting instead of dual mana costs. So yeah, you're definitely right.
But yeah, so what's something that catches your eye at the moment?
Something that catches my eye. I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about a card that adds double Wooburg. Obviously, people really
Oh.
love their five color. And again, since this is a commander show, typically, I like talking about all the commander applications for a lot of these cards. And something that adds enough, or double Wooburg, which is enough to activate a door to nothingness. Obviously, when Coalition Victory was out, that kind of fit along there. Rahmos Dragon Engine does this too. Another card that adds double Wooburg. So that's, again, that's two white, two blue, two black, two red, two green, mana to your mana pool. That's pretty big because that allows you to basically play a lot of things. I think the most recent ones we've seen with mana production like this was Giganta, the Wellspring out of Ikoria, I believe, and where you could
And
tap Jeggy to create Wooburg effectively, and a card that allows you to not just create Wooburg but create double Wooburg. Everyone in their five color commanders, their Jodas, their Sisseys, their Ur-Dragons, First Slivers, whatnot, they're just gonna love this card. I have no idea what it's gonna be, no idea if it's gonna be a permanent, an instant. Actually, I don't even know if we've seen this on an instant or a sorcery. That'd be kind of interesting.
I would say it's probably more realistic it's going to be a permanent. I would be very dumbfounded if they put this on an instant or a sorcery, because a ritual to produce 10 mana, that can do some. I'm just going to be blunt. It's going to do some dumb shenanigans, especially in storm-based brews. Like, especially in any. Let's be frank, in any brew that can allow you to essentially copy spells, having a sorcery spell that is a 10 mana ritual, that's kind of dumb.
Oh, it
That's.
totally is. But that's why we play this format, right?
That's fair. That's fair. Let me put it like this. It would be one of those where I would be concerned of its power level. Let's phrase it like
Oh
that.
yeah, no kidding. I guess it's just kind of food for thought, especially since there is another card on this list that this goes with. But again, I digress. So Lev, what's another one that's really jumping out at you in the first couple of sections here on this Tumblr post?
The one that I was kind of like curious about and I decided to do some research on was the one that says a mechanic which first premiered in a standard legal set in the 1000s, which I'm guessing by their words they're like saying the 2001s, 2002s, you know, kind of like that scenario, and then it will see a return standard. For me, I can point it down to potentially two mechanics, though there could be other mechanics. I wasn't able to research every standard set within the 2000, early 2000s and such. The ones that I could see it could be the potential is Provoke, which would be very interesting to see them bring back Provoke. For those who don't know what Provoke is, it was a mechanic in, oh, I can't recall if it was Legions or such. The basic premise of the mechanic is when you attack with a creature with Provoke, you can essentially target a creature, untap it, and it's forced to block, which. In kind of like this theme of crime families, you know, going to war with each other kind of like scenario, it kind of makes sense with bouncers and all that. Maybe it would make sense to have some provoking shenanigans. It's either that, or one that's been quite rumored around is the potential that the comeback of Hideaway, which for all those who play Commander, we know about our Hideaway lands, so it'll be kind of like interesting to see if we have a take on that mechanic again and such. So those are the two mechanics that I think we have a potential to see that's within this teaser, so to speak.
For sure, for sure. I mean, having a hideaway ability would be kind of interesting, especially on land, since with Neon Dynasty we did get Channel back, which is something that hadn't been around for a while. Bringing a mechanic that's like 20 years old would be fairly interesting to see, because again, we've seen a lot of a lot of different keywords come out in the recent years where they've had a precedent before, but maybe we haven't seen them in 15 years, 20 years, and it'd be really interesting to see something come back that you know would kind of breathe some life into it, if nothing else, especially since I'm going to assume that whatever it is, it's probably not one of the, you know, tops on the storm scale for keywords, right? So it's going to be
probably
something
not.
That it's going to be something that's going to be a little bit out of the ordinary. I'm looking up on Scryfall here right now, trying to find some interesting things here, and obviously it's kind of difficult to find that without really spending the time looking at it. But yeah, it'd be really cool to see something come out that, you know, uses a keyword that we haven't seen before. I mean, again, I think the perfect example of this was when Commander 2019 came out, and we had the return of the morph mechanic for the first time in a long time. Like, you hadn't seen morph in a while, so being able to then have a product where, bam, morph is on a card, it's in a commander deck, you know, that right there brings a little bit of legitimacy back to that mechanic, while also, you know, allowing players to really start digging back in the past and see what kind of cool things are out there. I mean, for honestly, you know, just other things we've seen is we've even seen, like, with the Modern Horizons, it was Time Spiral Remastered, sorry, where you were seeing, like, the Rebel mechanic return or a Shadow return on a couple of the cards. So, I mean, those things hadn't been seen in forever. But, you know, they were returned in a set where it obviously made sense to put them back. But yeah, just having something coming back, like, again, just like something with Shadow, for instance, you know, that's something that hadn't been seen in 20 years. Well, all of a sudden, bam, it's in Time Spiral Remastered. All of a sudden, it's back in the lexicon. You can start looking back. Hey, what other creatures have Shadow? So, again, it's obviously not going to be that. But, again, it's really exciting, I think, for me, who's fairly new to the game, to see a keyword that, you know, that I really haven't had a chance to play with, honestly, just show up and maybe be on a whole bunch of different cards so I actually get to experience something that maybe hasn't been seen in 20 years.
Well, you know what they say, it's always great to have a blast from the past.
As long as it has flashback, right?
Exactly. Or Echo.
All right. So the second card that I really want to look at here is one that reads, as an additional cost to cast a spell, sacrifice a creature, discard a card, or pay for life. Obviously, we as EDH players, we love modal cards. So the ability to be able to use an additional cost to sac a creature, discard a card, or pay for life is really interesting. A lot of players, especially since I've been getting the CDH, the more competitive realm more often here, is card Village Rites is really good, which is one black to allow you to sacrifice a creature, draw two cards. Well, again, we don't know exactly what the spell's going to do. I have a feeling that this is going to be probably an instant, probably in black, because typically sacrificing a creature or discarding a card or paying life are all within what black's part of the color pie, typically. And the ability is, again, discarding a card is not going to be a huge factor here, because you're probably going to have more cards in your hand, or paying for life. I mean, paying for life, it's no different than Snuff Out, right? I mean, that right there is a card that you're very familiar with there, Lev, because it's an all-star in a lot of different formats, or has been in the past.
Exactly.
And, I mean, the ability to have the modality to sacrifice a creature, which is nice for sacrifice decks, discard a card if you need to be able to put some fuel in the graveyard, or pay for life, which, you know, if you're really in a bind, you can just pay for life. Obviously, it's not going to be a game-breaking spell. It's probably going to be a common, honestly. But I just feel
or an uncommon. Like, yeah, I could see it could be potentially, like, I could see it potentially being, like, a charm. If I'm being honest, maybe it's one of the charms. Like, maybe the Cabaretti or the Jun charm. Riveteers, essentially.
Yeah, so, I mean, this definitely feels like the kind of card that's going to see a lot of commander play, depending on what exactly it does. With that modality, to be able to enable a lot of different strategies is just really nice, and I just like just like you said there, Lev, kind of having, like, a charm type effect. It's not quite the same, but on the other hand, it kind of works like a charm, and again, for those who are listening who don't know what the charms are, charms were cards that don't really get printed all that often. They're usually one mana, and had one of three different effects on them at instant speed. So something like this, I can easily see this having a mana value of one or two, honestly. Because typically when you have an additional cost that's this small, it's typically going to be kind of low.
And one thing to clarify, the charms can also be in different color pairs. Like, for example, if we like back to cons, we essentially saw like the whole cons got pretty much charms and such, and I'm pretty sure, spoiled today, you probably will catch up with it after the stream, I'm pretty sure they actually spoiled the Maestro charm, so we do know that the families are each going to get a charm. So that's why I made a guess with this.
Yeah.
And one additional fiend I will add to this card, it's really going to be very dependent on the cost, because the reason why Village Rice, the reason why Deadly Dispute, which is a pauper staple at the moment, the reason why those cards are very good is the fact that they're very cheap. They're 1, 2, sometimes even in some circumstances, 3 mana. So as long as this is a cheap spell, yeah, I think it's going to be potentially very powerful. It's going to be dependent on the cost, and it's going to be dependent on what you're getting out of it when you do these effects, so to speak. And also one other thing to keep in mind, with these type of modal effects, they are also good in synergy with decks that will benefit from what paying the cost is not paying a cost. Like, you know, sacrificing a creature. That's good in Aristocrat deck. Discarding a card. Madness if we were going all the way to Innistrad. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, and you're definitely right. Thank you for reminding me that we had a whole cycle of all the Ravnica guild charms, as well as the shards, or at least the cons. Wedges. Sorry, not shards. I always get those confused. But yeah, we had at least the shard charms available. And actually, yeah. I mean, I guess we got all of them because we did get Esper Charm, and that was a shard of Alara. So, yeah.
Technically, from the original Elder Dragons, like the original, like Krotzes, all that stuff, they also each all had a cycle of charms. Like Krotzes Charm, I think is the Krotzes variation, if my memory serves me correct.
Yeah. Okay, so now that we've had a very charmed discussion about charms, I hope you see what I did there. Lev, what's the next card on here that you feel would really be interesting to talk about?
I think the one that caught me by surprise, because I love copying stuff, but I'm kind of curious how they're going to approach this. Copy target spell you control that wasn't cast. That is a really, really weird wording. Because that tells me a few things. That tells me they're essentially trying to say, kind of like the reanimated base spells, or like the spells that put a permanent onto the battlefield that... But it's hard because technically, it's a weird wording here because I don't know how they're wording this. Are we talking like spells where you essentially just put them onto the battlefield for free, like are essentially our reanimated spells of the world and such, and can you copy that target spell that wasn't cast? Or are they talking more like the cascade-style spells, where essentially you cast them for free and such? Like, I'm really curious, because it's kind of like one of those... It doesn't really make sense, because it's like, wait, how can you cast a spell but not cast a spell and copy a target spell on the stack? It's like, it's very interesting to try to figure out what they mean by that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, again, you're right. Cast is the pejorative term here, because we also have play, but I feel like Cascade kind of casts without paying its mana cost, so it makes me wonder, is this something where we're going to see something like Suspend Return, where we have cards that specifically... I mean, I was just digging through some of my cards today looking for various playables for a new deck, and I was finding a couple of Suspend cards where they only do the thing if they come in from exile without being cast originally. So, I mean, I guess that would be cast too, but yeah, they're just... That's interesting, honestly. It just... Are we going to see a mechanic? Again, this kind of goes back to your point a minute ago about the mechanics. Is there a possibility that this would be some kind of new mechanic which allows cards to return to the battlefield or go back to your hand? Is this going to be... Of course, Dash, I guess, would have been cast from your hand. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to see how the cast versus play is really going to get fleshed out according to this card.
And one last one that's just, I'm going to mention it because it's very similar.
Sure.
It's the last one. You may cast any number of copies without paying their mana costs. Oh dear, that depending on what they mean by copies there, that could be huge.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, obviously when we first look at this, we're going to think, okay, this will really make Dragon's Approach decks really just go off, or Rat Colony, or just, you know, any kind of Karkashima deck just go off. But
exactly.
I guess there's also a possibility that there could be copies of, you know, this kind of feels like it could be a creature too. I guess now that we've seen a lot of like ninja support with Neon Dynasty, I guess we could see some maybe creature-based permanents. I'm not sure, but this, for all we know, this could also be a common too. You know, copying a life gain spell. I don't know.
True.
We've also, yeah. So, you're right. This is a really intriguing card. I have no idea, but we'll find out here soon enough what that means.
Anyway, anything else you want to look at?
Yeah, so the one other one I want to really talk about is, again, I've had a friend of the show, Nathan Jones, a.k.a. the Hermit Druid, on here a couple months ago to talk about CDH, and mostly talk about Dargo the Shipwrecker.
He talks so much about that card.
If you've heard about Dargo, and again, I will have Nathan on here at some point to talk about Dargo in more detail. But anyway, if you know anything about Dargo, you know that sacrificing permanents, including sacrificing Dargo, is really important. So the one that I think really deserves to be shouted out, because Nathan really honed in on it here, is where X is the number of permanents you sacrifice this turn. So Dargo is a pirate for 600 red, reads, you can sacrifice any number of artifacts and creatures as an additional cost to cast Dargo, and Dargo costs 2 less for each one of those you've sacrificed this turn. Also reading that Dargo costs 2 less for every other creature or artifact you've sacrificed during that turn, including Dargo. So the ability to have X be the number of permanents you sacrifice this turn has definitely got Nathan and others thinking that this could potentially be a Dargo-esque card, where all of a sudden the number of permanents, the number of things you've sacrificed, all of a sudden starts becoming important.
Exactly.
I mean, we did get a card out of Strixhaven called Plum the Forbidden, which allowed you to sacrifice any number of creatures as an additional cost to be able to draw cards and lose life. So it's entirely possible that this turns out to be something like that, but just, I think from the way it's worded, this definitely looks like a Dargo card. This definitely sounds like something that might go really well in that sort of strategy. What are your thoughts on that, Liv?
It's definitely one of those, like, it really, this one's going to be a case of, it's going to depend on a few things. One, it's going to depend on the color of the spell, but granted, Dargo, one benefit of Dargo we should mention is that it's a partner commander. So even if it's like an off color, if it's not a red spell, if it's like, let's say, a black or a black-green spell or something like that, you can partner Dargo with essentially other commanders to help essentially be able to splash that spell in. So that's something to keep in mind. But also, really, while having X being the number of permanents you sacrifice this turn is great, because let's be frank, Dargo's main shtick is it wants to infinitely sacrifice and such, and just essentially go off with payoffs like aristocrat triggers or essentially creatures that get bigger with sacrifice stuff. Really, it depends on what the payoff of the spell is. Like, if X was like, let's say, for example, target opponent or each opponent loses X life, where X is the number of permanents you sacrifice this turn, then, oh my gosh, yeah, that's going to go in every Dargo deck ever, because that can be a one-turn lethal.
Yeah.
But, on the other hand, it could also just be, like, you gain X life, which, that's a little bit anticlimactic. Or it could be a compromise, where it's like, maybe you draw cards and such. Really, it depends on what are we doing with that X, to be frank.
Yeah. You're definitely right on that one. Some of the ones I think of immediately are Jury, Master of the Review for commanders, as well as Mazarek, Death Priest. And
exactly.
both of those commanders worry a lot about sacrificing things and actively want you to sacrifice things to be able to activate their abilities. So again, we could easily just be seeing something that works well in Golgari, the green black color pairing, or in Rakdos. But again, if it's in Rakdos and it includes red, Dargo's going to want it. So, we'll definitely have to keep that one on the radar, if nothing else, out of deference for Nathan there. So, I know that I'm kind of jumping things a little bit here, but I think I'd be remiss if I didn't shout out to good friend Peter, a.k.a. Mono Whiteboarder. He'd want me to talk about the multiple white cards capable of drawing a card each turn. And again, a lot of people are really excited about doing that sort of thing. I mean, I guess I'm a little bit mixed on this one. I feel like we've gotten a lot of white card draw recently, and that's not to say we don't want to see card drawing in white. I just hope that we don't... I don't feel like we're seeing every card has draw a card stapled to it. There was something nice about white, or at least something kind of challenging about white, where it's like it wasn't necessarily giving you everything for free. So we'll see exactly how this falls. And you know, maybe this will be one of my new favorite cards. I don't know. We'll see. I'm just kind of nervous about exactly what they mean by that, as well as the other one here, right above it, a draft theme caring about a threshold in the graveyard we haven't cared about before. So obviously threshold, and you know this a lot better than I do, Lev, something threshold with the minimum 7 cards in your graveyard, or delirium out of shadows block, where you had
or
to have at least
like
4.
The spare mastery, I'm forgetting the name of it, it was an origins mechanic where it's like you determine how many instant or sorcery spells was in your graveyard.
Two or more, and you could typically like copy or get an extra effect of spell mastery.
I guess the question is, what permanent have we not seen before that we checked that was in the graveyard?
I mean,
that's really the question there.
Delirium was looking at the different card types, and you had to have at least 4 different card types in your graveyard to be able to activate that. Undergrowth worries about the number of creature cards in your graveyard. I guess the ones we haven't really seen before, I mean, and this is just me kind of going off the cuff here, is... I mean, we haven't really seen a number of, like, legendary creatures in Graveyard, except for, of course, Kethis the Hidden Hand kind of worries about that.
You know what I think it is?
What?
The fact that we're going into a faction set with multicolors, I bet you it's going to be something along the lines of different color permanents within your graveyard.
Oh, that would actually be quite perfect, because then you could have multiple mill strategies in various colors, and have, like, Grixis Mill. All of a sudden, you have some... I don't know, mechanic for your crime family, where all of a sudden you need to have... So it almost ends up being like pseudo-graveyard devotion, right?
Or like a weird take on Sunburst, if you want to look at it at that
angle. Yeah, I hear you on that. I mean, we even see one that's Sunburst related on here, too, if I want to bring that up, where we count the colors of the sacrificed creature. That's kind of Sunburst, in a way.
Yeah, like that's...
Sunburst.
I think we're going to be... This set definitely feels like it's going to care a lot about colors. So I think it's something we do have to keep in mind. Also, one thing I do want to add with the mono whiteboard remark about multiple white cards. One thing you got to keep in mind, this doesn't say mono white cards. So this could just be a case where it's like a Cabaretti draw spell. Or technically Naya, but Cabaretti, you know. Riveteo's Jun, yada yada yada. But... Granted, Jun didn't have any white in it, but, you know, like, Obscura, it could be a case of the draw spell is a gold spell. Are we going to probably see 1 or 2 mono-white draw card spell or permanents? Probably, but just something to keep in mind.
For sure. I mean, I just saw a lot of chat about that on Twitter today, and I figured I'd want to, you know, talk about it a little bit, especially since it's on a lot of people's minds right now, and I figured might as well bring that up, is that in case it is mono-whites, want to talk about it. Okay.
That is true.
So now we're going to move down to the creature type lines here. So Lev, obviously we've seen a couple different creature types, some artifact creatures, and some legendary creatures. What really sticks out to you from these 10 cards that they've previewed?
I mean, the one that pretty much, I think the one I'm going to talk about, because it was Nate's response, and we're kind of like, we were all kind of like concerned about it, essentially with, especially if it's a good card for Dargo, is the... Artifact creature treasure dog. Please do not make us have to sacrifice the doggo. Please.
Yeah, I did see that earlier, because again, treasures are usually meant to be sacrificed and dogs are usually not meant to be sacrificed. If we've learned anything from Isamaru from Neon Dynasty, it's that no one wants to sacrifice your one mana commander for obvious reasons. So yeah, that seems problematic.
But besides that, the one that kind of that I'm really excited for is actually just all the party types, like the Raccoon Rogue, the Devil Warrior, and the Angel Warrior, mostly mm-hmm. because I play a General Tazzy party deck, and that's essentially a rainbow tokens brew, and I would be really excited if any of those are kind of like a token generator of some sort, because that would be very nice to just splash into the brew and be able to be tutored with Tazzy.
For sure, and we're also, rumor has it, we're going to be getting potentially a new party commander deck precon at some point here, so hopefully some nice new cards to go into Commander Legends 2, which again, we'll not talk about on this episode because we don't know a lot about it yet, but something to keep in mind for your party deck there, Lev.
That is true, and also a good way to get bring back the Battlebond lands, which, thank God.
For sure. So I think when I'm looking at these creatures, I really want to see what the Sphinx Demon's going to be. This kind of screams Esper. This is the white-black-blue color pairing.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, it just screams Esper to me, because we've seen Sphinxes be in this color combination. I mean, we've seen Yinette. A good friend of the show, Mr. Fitzy Fitz, has a Yinette deck, for instance. We've seen other ones, again, I'm really blanking on the name, but we see a lot of Sphinxes in white, we've seen a lot of Sphinxes in blue, especially, a lot of the story ones, not just Yinette, but we've also seen, Azor, trying to remember the one from Ravnica, oh man, but Sphinx's Revelation, obviously, being in the Azorius color pairings, and, I just feel like this is a really interesting design space, because we're mixing two creature types that we haven't really seen before go together. So that'll be interesting. A lot of people are losing their minds over the Cephalid Advisor legendary creature, since we haven't seen Cephalids in a long time. And going back to your comment there earlier, Lev, about seeing mechanics we haven't seen in 20 years, let's say. Well, we haven't really seen Cephalids in better part of 20 years either. So that'll be interesting to see, especially since... we don't really know. Is there a lot of water on New Capenna? I mean, where are the Cephalids going to live necessarily? So a lot of interesting things to think about.
They have to hydrate somewhere. Like, it's a big city. They probably have lakes of some sort or natural water system. But going back to a few things. One, the Sphinx Demon. I think you're right on the nail on the fact of it being an Esper card. Mostly because what we know is a few reasons. One reason is we know that Obscura is the Esper pretty much crime family. And the basic premise of Obscura is they're illusionists. They want to predict the future to make sure that they can take advantage of crimes in the future and such. Or the basic S22 premise of that. And what is a creature type that we know that likes to predict the future? Sphinx.
Sphinx, yeah. I was going to say that, yeah, that the Sphinx... love to be, and they're also really cryptic, which really falls under Esper's kind of way of looking at things, is you have Dimir's way of really being secretive, you have the Azorius way of kind of worrying about the lawful aspects of things, and then Esper just, in a lot of cases, really loves artifacts. So it just makes me wonder, is there potentially going to be some artifact synergies here, or is this going to be some brand new territory for this color combination, if it is Esper, that we've, like with Strixhaven that came out last year, is it going to be a complete reimagining of this three-color shard?
Like, the thing that we know is they predict the future, but we also know that they like illusions, so I'm wondering if it's going to be something token-based. Like, I'm very curious.
Certainly possible. Do you think that, do you think they'd be bringing back the illusion creature type as part of that?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Along with the obvious downside, whenever illusions are targeted by spell or ability, you have to sacrifice them typically. So, a big downside. I mean, we have seen illusions recently. I think there was one in, what was it, Eldraine with the reflection tokens, I believe.
I think it's not Eldraine. I think it's Pharos Beyond Death, because it was I'm forgetting the name of the story. It's based off the classic Greek myth. Like, the guy who looked at himself too much in a lake and then drowned himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Narcissus or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But that card kind of reminds me of when you mention illusions. It's like, we've seen the reflection tokens. We've seen tokens that kind of act like that. And this would be the perfect opportunity to bring illusions back, if nothing else, this is like a token. Which would feed into that token strategy you just mentioned.
True. Like, it could be kind of like a case of maybe it's like a variation of, if we rewind just a little bit and went back to, like, let's say the technically, you know, Midnight Hunt, we had the Decayed Zombie Tokens, which are essentially zombie tokens that have a ridiculously major downside, but the catch was that the cards that produced them were very efficient for what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a case that the illusion tokens are going to have very efficient ways of being produced, but they might have the downside that if they get targeted by anything, bada beep, bada boop.
Definitely, definitely. So now that we've had a chance to look through these, Lev, before we end the episode here, what are your thoughts on the overall of this Tumblr post, and where do you really think we're going to be going in the next couple of weeks as the cards start getting revealed and we start seeing where the set goes?
I think the one thing that people are going to start realizing once they are going to see more of the story and more of the set coming out, I think the set is going to be a little bit, like, we're definitely getting into the noir theme, let's be blunt there, but I think it's going to be wacky noir. And I don't mean wacky like unstable wacky. I think wacky in the sense that it's like, kind of like, for example, like the dogs doing the poker painting and such, uh-huh. where it looks like a complete normal thing, but still it's like, wait, there's a bunch of dogs playing poker. Or like, we're going to see a bunch of different creature types doing stuff that we usually would see in a typical noir film and such. So kind of like wackiness in that angle, so to speak.
For sure, for sure. And again, we're going to be seeing a lot of things run by demons. So again, we're not going to be seeing human crime families. So that right there already belies a little bit of a difference from what we typically think in noir. So we have this, we understand the setting, but obviously things are going to be a little different. And again, from what I have looked at the story, the little bits I've seen here and there, there are things behind the scenes, potentially, that may change things. So we'll see.
Other than that, the other thing I would say, that from my observations, I think it's safe to say that we already known this from coming in, but from just seeing the teaser, it kind of like put the stamp on the print, so to speak, that this is going to be a set that's going to emphasize multicolor strategies. Like, we've seen this with just multiple, like, ways to produce multiple colors. We've seen this in the ways that cards that care about colors of sacrifice and such. Like, and we even see an activated ability that causes Wooburg. So I think it's safe to say that this set is going to have a lot of multicolor shenanigans.
For sure. And it'll be really interesting to see that, because I obviously wasn't playing back during the cons block. So it'll be my first time, really. And I wasn't even playing during the last Ravnica set either. So it'll be really interesting to see how, I guess, how those color alignments and the color pairings really work for really my first attempt to really get into this sort of thing, where the color pairings really do matter. Whereas, you know, in the last couple of years, they haven't really mattered as much, I guess. So we'll see.
So what's your take from the teaser?
I mean, I do agree with you, is that this definitely looks like a multicolored mattered set. It looks like they're bringing a lot of interesting things back that we've seen in recent time. The Dargo effect, for instance. Multiple white cards capable of drawing cards each turn. The card that makes cat and dog tokens. We saw Ren and Siri, core, was that core 21, I think?
Yep, Ren and Siri players are very happy of seeing that line of text.
Yep, red creature makes token copies of creatures you control. Hello, Kiki-Jiki was kind of doing that. But also Rionya, Fire Dancer, has been doing that recently. Spell that costs 13 black black that you know is not going to cost 13 by itself.
It's probably going to be like a reduced cost spell. Like you have to do something to reduce its cost or something.
Yeah, and
black black is a lot.
Oh, it totally is. And you're right. The 5 mana cost with the existing mana symbols that we've never used before. Wizards of the Coast is really trying a lot of new things with the mana cost, with the mana symbols. We just saw that with the new Tamiyo Planeswalker from Neon Dynasty. The fact that Phyrexian mana could be utilized in a hybrid mana format like that, and then have an effect on the card, too. So, yeah, just interesting little ways to play around with that, because if there's something that EH players love, it's hybrid mana, right?
Especially when the card can be a multi-format staple card.
For sure. And again, we're going to be seeing a lot of really cool returning things, a lot of the sacrifice modality, color matters, as well as just some interesting new legendary creatures and bringing in some things we haven't seen before. Cat Citizen. We haven't seen Citizens for a bit since, I believe, War of the Spark was the last one to have a Citizen token. So
I think you're correct.
And then Cephalids. We haven't seen them in a long time. So, yeah. It'll be really interesting to see where this goes, and again, we've got a few weeks to go until pre-release. Really excited, and again, that's the end of our episode, so thank you so much, Lev, for taking the time to talk to me about this today.
My pleasure. Nevertheless, let's see what family shenanigans shall happen.
All right, sounds good. And again, before you go, where can people find the stuff that you work on?
Of course. For those who want to check my stuff, I have a Twitter where essentially it's PGD Hansen, where I keep updated with kind of like my perspective on card games and such with the upcoming set and such. I also do a YouTube channel where I do Arena Janky deck techs as well as just doing top deck thoughts. And I also stream on Twitch once in a blue moon. I'm actually trying to start streaming a little bit more sooner. I'm just having a period where I have a busy work schedule, so it does make streaming just a teeny bit tricky, one could say.
For sure. Well, thank you for taking the time to be on the episode here today.
My pleasure.
All right. If you're interested in hearing any of the previous episodes I've done on the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. There's your Googles, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, and a million other outlets. I never remember all of them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are you can find me on those outlets. You can also find me on Twitter at MTGInQuarantine. Something big before I get to the rest of my usual outro here is, as of last week, you can now buy your officially licensed MTGInQuarantine playmats over on InkGaming.com. I'm really excited about that. If you've seen the logo, if you've seen the podcast, and you've always wanted to take home a playmat for your very own, now is your chance. Just go on over to InkGaming.com. You can find the link in my link tree. I also have an affiliate link on there, so definitely use that when you're going to just be buying anything, but especially if you're buying one of my playmats. It's available in two colors. It's the full-color logo as well as the monochrome logo. So if you've ever wanted to have one of those playmats, now is your chance. Definitely pick one of those up when you have the chance. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give another huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people that supported me over at patreon.com/mtgquarantine. So a huge thanks to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtgquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.